And welcome in third and final hour here of Robbie and Rexrode Monday edition. Joe Rexrode here, microphone one, which is always a dangerous proposition. Adam Vingan in for Robbie Stanley. Nick Fraser in for Michelle Knezovic. And we are so happy to welcome in, as we always do Monday at this time, our friend Corey Curtis. Corey, how the heck are you?
You know, when you combine Ancient Aliens and Bigfoot in one show, it's a great way to start the day.
Did you wait? Bigfoot and who? You should have said Aliens. Nessie.
No. we're talking about Bigfoot being an interdimensional space being.
I'm so confused right now.
How do you feel about the Milwaukee Admirals, Corey?
Yeah, we're wasting time that could be spent talking about the Milwaukee Admirals.
Like Bigfoot, I've never seen them.
And that's going to be clipped and sent on Twitter everywhere. So don't check your mentions today, Corey.
Yeah, Corey, you are now part of the Haters Club. Thank you. You've joined Jared and me in the Haters Club.
I'm not hating them. I live in Nashville. So I mean, do they have a TV contract that I don't know about?
Not locally. Not here.
Okay. Well, there you go.
There's a lot of there's a lot of attention on the Milwaukee Admirals playoff run. They are now playing the Coachella Festival Festivuses. Who are they playing?
The Coachella Valley Firebirds.
Okay, there we go. So they've advanced to the next
league.
this entire thing is just
it's fuel. It's jumped the shark.
The haters are just gonna have a field day with this. Okay, but let's take that to a topic of relevance locally, Corey.
Ooh,
I want your analysis. And we talked about this before, but I want your analysis at this moment, because John Glennon wrote a piece in the Nashville Post, which I think was an interesting take on the John Hines situation, which is
like if
you were going to move on from him, from John Hines, you know, like, you have to get into the mix with these coaches. As Vingan has brought up, like, Barry Trotz is a career coach. He knows you can't let guys, you know, just not know their job status, right? It's a terribly uncomfortable situation. I got someone on the text line saying the reason, you know, I care about the Admirals is because if Carl Taylor wins the Calder Cup, he's definitely getting the Preds job. I mean, there's a lot of different ways to speculate about this, but what is your view of the John Hines not being confirmed as coach next year situation?
Well, number one, I don't know if someone winning the Calder Cup changes their ability to coach and be a coach at the NHL level or not. I mean, there's a lot more complexities to being a minor league coach than strictly wins and losses. But he's done a fine job since he's been down there, obviously, with the way a lot of these players have been developed. You know, look, I think Barry Trotz handled it largely the way he needed to, which was to be supportive of the coach that was there, but while also saying, you know, there's a process to it, just like the process that he went through. And so I think, you know, he couched it there. But I do think he's had enough time to make a decision. Does that depend on who's available and who he can talk to? Maybe, certainly. But I think the time has definitely come, you know, to make it. If you're going to make a change, you need to make it sooner, you know, rather than later. Not saying that that's what he's going to do or not. I just think there's been time to figure that out.
Yeah. I agree. I've been waiting. It's like, okay, one of these days we're just going to get a press release. Like Adam said, you don't have to make an announcement, technically, if you have a coach under contract. But if you're asked, like Barry Trotz was on this show a couple weeks ago, and you're still saying that you're evaluating, I think you do, right? I mean, I think that you do have to say it.
You have to clarify. When you're basically saying, we're not sure, we've got to figure it out, you need to give an answer, you know, one way or another. Maybe there's a good way to word that I don't know about, you know, but you know, when it's left hanging out there, it needs a resolution.
You can just like tweet out a video of like John Hines, you know, organizing his office or something. Coach Hines is ready for next season. You know, then you're not making a statement, but you're making it clear.
Well, you know, you could also just say, hey, you know, we've got the draft coming up in a month. You know, Coach Hines and members of his staff, you know, will be available to discuss the team and what they're going to be looking to add, you know, this coming season. Just make some kind of like meaningless media availability, you know, that's not really necessary, but clarifies that he's the coach.
And then the first question will be, so John, you are the coach next year? just to clarify
next year. So, yeah.
So, Corey, Tennessee Titans OTA open tomorrow. You're most let's take the quarterbacks out of it. You're most interested in what non-quarterback thing?
I think, you know, I don't know how much we'll see what the offense looks like, but I mean that's kind of what I'm curious to see because, you know, we've heard, you know, about change. And look, there's only so much change you can see in practice. It's not like, you know, they're putting a 15-play drive together against the Broncos here or something where you can say, oh, yeah, that was really different. But, you know, I definitely, you know, want to see that. You know, after hearing Treylon Burks last week, I'm anxious to see what he looks like. I thought he looked great. I thought he sounded great. And I'm looking forward to see what it looks like on the practice field.
Corey Curtis from News 2 joining us here on Robbie and Rex Road. Corey, last week Treylon Burks addressed you media types and talked about how in shape he was and how good he feels, which is a 180 from this time last year where he couldn't stay on the field and we were looking at allergy reports online to see if he may have had some issues with pollen and whatnot. I know that he is a gigantic factor in the success or failure of this team when you consider the wide receiver position. And Joe and Jared had a hearty argument last week on Jared versus Joe. What did he say? That he was more he was more dynamic than A.J. Brown, Treylon Burks? What was that?
Jared said that Treylon Burks is more dynamic than A.J. Brown.
Why don't you weigh in on that, Corey? Where do you side with this, Jared or Joe, when it comes to Treylon Burks' dynamism?
Yeah,
dynamism. I don't know what word you use there versus that of A.J. Brown.
You know what? They're different. And, you know, first off, Treylon Burks is going to have to show he's more dynamic to be ruled more dynamic. And he hasn't to this point because, you know, just hasn't played enough football. You know, A.J. Brown is not a burner, but he's like having a tank in the secondary. You know, he gets that ball and he's able to turn it up and go. He's also able to, you know, not be a super tall guy, but be able to battle and high point the ball. So he does a lot of that stuff really, really well. If we're talking about, you know, going for the deep ball, maybe Treylon's going to have something on there. You know, we'll see. But look, I like the guy's athleticism. I love the size of his hands. I mean, they swallow the football up. And, you know, I think he's got the capability. I mean, A.J. never put up 1,100 yards for this team. Now, part of that is the style of the offense. But, you know, I expect Treylon Burks to do that this season. When this season's over, I'll have a better idea on who's dynamic or not. All I know is this. A.J. Brown's a really good NFL wide receiver, and this team definitely misses having him.
The word is dynamism, by the way.
It is dynamism.
Okay,
yeah.
I had to look that up. The state of being dynamic is dynamism.
Yes, there you go. Okay, good.
There's your SAT word for the day, everybody.
Good to know. And, you know, on your point on A.J. Brown, yeah, I mean, he didn't – those numbers also have to do with missing games, right? I mean, he missed games here too. So, but and that was – that you know, he played, what, 13 and 21? He played 14 and 20. So that's part of it. But yeah.
It seemed like there were some chronic knee issues there.
Right. And that was the question. You know, that to me was the question, the only question I had, you know, about him, like with the long-term deal here, which he didn't end up getting. But it's funny you say that because Jared actually, he was like, well, A.J. Brown would be better at like high-pointing the ball, but Treylon Burks better at running away from people. Like you said, look, we can watch some Treylon Burks film from Arkansas and see a very explosive, dynamic player. And we saw glimpses of it last year. The Green Bay game was very encouraging.
And that catch he made against the Eagles before he was knocked out of the game.
No doubt.
That was, to me, is the...
That was big time.
That was the quintessential Treylon Burks catch of the year, right?
It was. No, I mean, that was... Yeah. I mean,
that play against the Cowboys on the sideline where he had the leg strength, stayed upright, inbounds, took it down the field. I mean, he's a guy with a lot of ability. I mean, there's a reason he was picked. What was it, 16th or 17th overall? And, I mean, if the Titans didn't take him, word was the Cowboys were salivating to take him. So, I mean, the Titans aren't the only one who like Treylon Burks. There's a lot of people. I mean, you don't go for 230 or whatever he did against Alabama without being pretty good.
Yeah, no, I mean, no, he absolutely has talent. But, you know, we've seen tremendous production and consistent. And I just think the foot quickness is, to me, the difference between the two. I don't think they're as comparable as players as we want them to be, even though, you know, it was a
comparison that
we made going into the draft, and then obviously it'll always be a comparison because of what happened on draft night. But let me ask you this, Corey, and I know we've talked a lot about the receivers, but I feel like Kyle Phillips, along with Treylon Burks, has to be considered a necessity. Like, he has to be a part of this. What is your – go ahead.
I think he's going to be number two.
Number two in terms of production at the receiver position. Yeah. I would agree with that. So who's number three?
I don't know. Probably it would be Westbrook, Akine, or Chig, you know, out of the tight end position. I mean, I think Chig has to be a priority. You know, that guy's got to touch the ball at least three times a game. At least. I mean, he's a matchup problem. He's got good hands. He's explosive. He's strong. You know, you got to find ways to get him, you know, into the secondary with the football because he's a problem. But I agree with you totally about Kyle Phillips. And I may have talked with this about Jared, may have been with you guys last week. I'm not sure. We forget, going through camp and to start last season, how much Ryan Tannehill threw at Kyle Phillips. It was a lot. He was one of his favorite targets. And so, you know, if he can stay, you know, and I always say hope's not a strategy, you know, but, you know, he was a guy who stayed healthy largely through college, did not stay healthy last year. If he can stay healthy, you know, I feel like he can be a productive, you know, member of this team. How much? We're going to find out. But I thought the indications we got through camp last year and the preseason, and even I think he had six catches in the opener, was that he can be a large part of the offense.
Yeah. No, I mean, he was the guy he looked to in the biggest play of that drive to, you know, to set up the field goal that was missed. So, no, it is easy to forget. But, yeah, no, he was a favorite target instantly for Tannehill.
Mm-hmm.
Talking to Corey Curtis, News 2. One last thing for you, Corey. Just your quick – We talk about this, I feel like, every year in some form, but this year it's especially extreme. The Titans are, I think, a lot of NFL media just think they're going to be terrible. Not bad, not middling, but terrible. Why do you think that is?
Yeah. Well, Joe, it's a great question because I've noticed it too, and I brought it up to some people. The only thing I can come up with is they think Tannehill is on his way out. That's the only way they're a bottom five team is if Ryan Tannehill is not the quarterback, because he's too good of a player for them to just crater. If the offensive line is 50% better than it was last year, they're going to be able to protect the quarterback better and run the football even better. And they still ran it pretty well at times last year. And I think that defensive front four, you know, keeps them in every game. And they're in what most people consider to be one of the worst two divisions of football. So, you know, you add all that up, and I don't see a bottom five team unless you're breaking in a rookie quarterback and you think it's going to be a struggle. And so that's all I can come up with, unless you're just going to go by, well, they lost 7 in a row to finish the season. And if that's the case, you're being lazy because you're not looking at how and why the 7 in a row happened.
Corey Curtis, News 2. Thank you, sir. We appreciate you.
I appreciate it, and I especially appreciate Adam joining the conversation. I, for the longest time, thought he had a grudge against me. But
why would I have a grudge against you?
I don't know. You wouldn't speak to me. You were just like Silent Bob from those movies from the 80s.
Well, when you're sitting in with Chase,
Jay and Silent
there's
Bob.
Only so much oxygen in the room. Joe allows a little bit more. So
wow.
Yes. Chase is not. Chase may run the place, but he is not immune to. He is not, you know, immune to the. To the.
Yeah. Know. Well, we've been ripping Jared. Let's rip Chase a little bit. Yeah. I like it. Yeah.
Okay. Sure. Yeah.
Thanks, Corey.
Is that a beard on his face or moss? I mean, come on.
Corey Curtis.
That's
we should
why
stop
I shave.
Before we all get in trouble.
Bye.
See ya. And when we come back on Robbie and Rex Road, we will. I guess we could rip Chase more and also react a little bit to Corey. 102.5. 106.3 The Game. Robbie and Rex Road is presented by TJ Anderson Homes of Benchmark Realty, where their advanced pay by TJ option can save you thousands when selling your home. Also, tune in for Nashville Sounds baseball tomorrow, 6:35 p.m. at 94.9 The Fan. The Sounds take on the Iowa Cubs AAA affiliate of the Chicago Cubs. Sounds Baseball on 94.9 The Fan, presented by 312 Pizza, Farm Bureau Health Plans, and Family Leisure. Welcome in, Robbie and Rex Road, here on 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Joe Rex Road, Adam Vingan, Nick Frazier, and we just had Corey Curtis on, and I think one thing he mentioned there, Adam, about the Titans, you know, big picture expectations, which are very low. There is some laziness, and look, this is part of, I think, any media that cover a league. Okay, you can watch as much as possible. You can try to follow teams as closely as possible. There's some that you just aren't going to have a great handle on. I think there is some level of they're trying to rebuild. Maybe Tannehill loses his job. Last year they had a losing streak. But I think if you look closely enough at this team and some of the things they do have, it's hard for me to wrap my head around 3-4 wins as a prediction, but a lot of people seem to think that. What is your take on why that is?
I wonder how much of this was influenced. I'm sure a lot of it, but how much of it was influenced by the drafting of Will Levis? If the Titans would not have drafted a quarterback who could feasibly take over at some point this season, and you knew going into the season that Ryan Tannehill had no competition for the starting role, would that change the calculus? How much would that change the calculus? Because I'm sure it would, but how much?
Yeah. No, I think that's fair. That's sort of the signal of the rebuild signal.
I did find an article on NFL.com. The NFL QB Index ranking all 68 starting quarterbacks from the 2022 NFL season. So this was done after the Super Bowl, and it was written by Mark Sessler from the Around the NFL podcast. And he ranked all 68 quarterbacks who started a game in the NFL last season. Where do you think Ryan Tannehill is on that list?
Well, he shouldn't be any lower than like 16 or so, 17.
He is 19.
Okay.
He is 19 on the list, and directly ahead of him, Daniel Jones was 18. Kirk Cousins was 17.
It's close.
Kyler Murray was 16.
That's tough.
Brock Purdy was 15.
Wow. Love the Brock Purdy, baby.
So those were the and then directly behind him, Jimmy Garoppolo was 20.
Okay.
Jacoby Brissett was 21. Matthew Stafford was 22.
Wow. So Ryan Tannehill, marginally better than Jacoby Brissett,
and worse than Brock Purdy.
Yeah.
And I think there is a level of disrespect being levied toward Ryan Tannehill. He is, as the kids like to say these days, mid. I mean, he is perfect. He's a perfectly fine NFL starting quarterback. He doesn't do anything particularly great, but he's good at doing a lot. He's good at a lot of things, but I don't, and like, correct me if I'm wrong here, because you watch him more closely than I do. I feel like he is not great at one particular thing. He's good at a lot of things, solid, but not, there's not one thing that he does better than most people at his position. And what's funny is I remember leading into the draft, I was reading a lot of the mocks, obviously. And I was partial to the mock over at The Ringer because they have a lot of great NFL coverage at The Ringer. And in their mock draft, they had the scouting reports for every top name in the draft. And I can't remember who did the mock draft. I think maybe Danny Kelly. The comparison to Will Levis was Ryan Tannehill. Like,
yeah,
I mean,
no, I think they're comparable for sure.
So, like, If the prevailing thought from out of town media is that at some point Ryan Tannehill is going to be overtaken by Will Levis, and then you're getting a less experienced version of Ryan Tannehill in a quarterback, they're going to be bad. I get that, but I do think there is some disrespect being levied at Ryan Tannehill.
Well, look, first of all, there's plenty of teams who draft quarterbacks and then they don't play them right away. That does happen. And
it seems to be more successful more often than not when you bring in a younger quarterback. I mean, obviously, your Patrick Mahomes, your Aaron Rodgers, there are examples of that. But, yeah, I mean, one question I would have asked Corey, and I'll ask this question. It's very early in the season, still a few months away. What percentage odds would you put on Will Levis starting a game for the Titans, a meaningful game? So let's exclude, like, the Titans have wrapped up the AFC South and they're sitting their starters at the final week of the season and Will Levis makes his first NFL start. Like, in a meaningful game, what are the chances you think Will Levis starts a game for the Titans?
And you're saying not injury-related?
Okay, let's say non-injury-related, performance-related for Ryan Tannehill. What are the chances?
Like, fractional.
Yeah.
Very, very low. Because Tannehill's good, and he's going to be good. That's the thing. The offensive line is gonna dictate a lot of this.
Right.
If it's significantly better, then I think that they're, and I think Tim Kelly has a chance to be an upgrade over Todd Downing, who everybody wants to blame everything on. But I think that's a potential upgrade. I mean, Derrick Henry's still there. Defense, I think, could still be really good. So no, I think there's a very low chance of that. This texter says something that I've heard, and I think maybe even some people in the building think this too. Quote, unnamed texter: the Titans are predicted to be bad for the same reason the Steelers are projected to be bad. If you don't have a star quarterback, star receiver, then they don't want to talk about you. Old football is boring football. And I get that to a point. I think that lends itself to people being, I guess, ignorant about you because they don't want to watch you.
Right.
But, if you're – there are a lot of really good people who cover the NFL, and they're not that simplistic in my mind. I mean, they – you know, look, this team with the boring football was the one seed two seasons ago, as we've talked about ad nauseum. So
and the receiver,
I think people don't want to talk about you because of that,
right?
For sure.
The texter is correct also in that the lack of a standout wide receiver is also hurting them.
It's a problem.
Hurting them as well.
I mean, that is a reason to think they might be bad.
If they still had AJ Brown, they would be much higher on the list. Like,
they'd also be better.
They would be better. But the fact that you mentioned that Kyle Phillips could be Corey mentioned that Kyle Phillips could be the number two receiver, followed by Nick Westbrook, Rex Rodakine. That's the problem. Is that, the texter brings up a good point. Who's the Steelers' number one receiver? Do they still have Deontay Johnson?
Well, they have Pickens.
They have Pickens.
Who's, I think, going to be – George Pickens is going to be, I think, potentially really good. But as of yet, we haven't seen him put it all together. And, look, Pickett, I think, could be good. But, yeah, I mean, I think there's something to that.
Who was the Steelers' receiver that went to Chicago during the season last year?
Claypool. Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
So I was thinking it's not Chase Claypool, and I guess do they still have Deontay Johnson? Is he still there?
Yeah, I believe so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, Pickens had a huge preseason, if I recall correctly, last year. Like, he was a hot.
He might be really good.
He was the hotness on the receiver. Because when I think about these things, I think about a lot of it through the prism of fantasy football because I like to play fantasy football, and how many Titans players other than Derrick Henry are you drafting in your fantasy league? Maybe Tannehill if you have a two quarterback league later down. But other than Derrick Henry, there's not a maybe you take a flyer on Treylon Burks in the mid round.
Maybe Chig somewhere in the tight end.
Chig seems like a top waiver wire guy.
Yeah, maybe.
But
in some leagues, if you have like a taxi squad, that's where you kind of want to put Chig, is on the taxi squad.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the fact is the Titans, they have a mid quarterback. They have a great but aging, in NFL terms, running back, who was a star, but he is a running back. There's just not a lot of name brand recognition on this team.
But you know what is exciting? The Milwaukee Admirals. When we come back, let's get back into the Predmirals on Robbie and Rex Show, 102.5, 106.3 of the game. You can watch us streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook Live every day. Video streaming brought to you by Superbook. Download their app today and use promo code THEGAME. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Show, 102.5, 106.3 of the game. Okay, we've got some... There were some triggering comments on the text line, which there's Chase. Chase is here. By the way, when we started ripping Chase, did you notice how the temperature in the studio got like 15 degrees colder immediately? He has like a button. I swear, he has a button on his belt. And dude, you got to wear a sweatshirt tomorrow, by the way, Vegan.
Yeah. And pants. Yeah,
there it is.
And pants.
I
am wearing
please,
shorts.
Yeah, please wear pants to work. Thank you. Thank you, Vingan. I mean, come on. What do you think this is? All right. So on the
hey, when you work from home, you know, there's not much of a dress code.
Yeah, yeah, I got you.
That's all I'm saying.
But also, you should still wear pants at home, too.
Yes.
But the Admiral's discussion, you know, the Carl Taylor aspect of it, right? The idea, that was the asterisk for Jerry.
We found the asterisk.
We found the asterisk. You did. Good job. And it is basically, unless they're trying to pump everybody up for Carl Taylor, which I mean, the amazing idea is like the idea that, Carl, if you win the Calder Cup, you get the head coaching job of the Nashville Predators. John, now you're coming back next year unless Carl wins the Calder Cup. And in that case, you got to step aside. But another text here that this is getting into my pet peeve territory because, like, some people throw this out and it's just mind-boggling. Quote, let's not forget, Trotz still isn't officially the GM yet, so is he allowed to pull that trigger? Am I allowed to be pissed about this, Mangan?
I'll allow it.
I mean, come on. Like, Barry Trotz is in charge. Barry Trotz was asked about the coaching situation by Robbie on this show the week before last. You know, he didn't say, guys, I appreciate the question, but I will direct you to David Poile, who is actually still the GM. I don't have that power. You know, like I've made the joke before. It's like, you know, Barry, don't hang up your pictures just yet on the office, okay? Now, as soon as you're officially the GM, you do that. No, Barry Trotz is in charge.
Do you think he has like a box of stuff in David's office? Like he's starting to move into there a little bit?
That's a good question. I don't know.
His fern, you know.
Yeah. You know,
his word of the day calendar.
Is the Far Side calendar. Nah, I don't know about that one. You know, David prefers Garfield. Let's, you know. Yeah, look, Barry Trotz is in charge. He's making the decision.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's – and I just – maybe Carl Taylor is a real candidate to be the head coach of the Nashville Predators. Maybe. I'd be surprised if Carl Taylor is the head coach of the Nashville Predators next year.
I feel like
that's been one of Jared's little conspiracy theories, that all this Admirals talk is so they can get people excited about Carl Taylor when they ultimately announce him. If they do hire him to be the head coach, I will tip my cap to Jared. I don't think that's what's going to happen.
I feel like Carl probably needs some time as an assistant coach at the NHL level.
Which could be here next, and that could be his next stop.
Which could, before he becomes an NHL head coach, you know, I've gotten to know Carl over the past several years, and I think he's a really smart guy and a really good coach. And even remember when he came up here and had to coach a couple of games because the Predators coaching staff was in COVID protocol, he did a really good job. And, you know, I think that was a nice little – amateur tryout almost for Carl Taylor and his staff, you know, who, you know, like most, like all NHL and AHL teams, the coaching staffs they work in lockstep. They're in constant communication, you know, and so, you know, I thought the reason why the Predators are having Admirals watch parties because they want to get fans conditioned that Carl Taylor is going to be the coach was not as bad as his, here's why the Titans and C.J. Stroud are working together to tank his draft value so that he'll drop to the Titans. That wasn't as bad as that one, dude. But it was
that was a doozy.
But it's still up there. But the problem is sometimes with conspiracy theories is if that one becomes true, then that becomes the rule. See, it happened this one time, so that means it always could happen. But, you know, my take on the whole, should we call it Admiral Gate? You know, Admiral Gate.
Predmiral Gate.
I know. Everything these days, Watergate happened, what, 30, 40 years
Everything's
ago?
Everything's a gate.
We'll call it Admiral Gate here on the station. My take on it is, as you said, if Predators fans, whose own team is not in the postseason for the first time since 2014, want to latch on to the Admirals as they are now in the conference final. They're one of the final four teams left in the American League. If they want to latch on to them and cheer for them and watch them and see Luke Evangelista and Joachim Kemmel and, you know, if you want to see other, you know, young players, you know, make an impact in a championship round, by all means, go nuts. Like, I have no issue with that. You know, it just feels like now, because of what Jared said, and I think you mentioned this earlier, that the play-by-play seemed to ramp up intentionally as a response to Jared's take last week. So that I can do without. Like, I don't need breathless tweeting of the Milwaukee Admirals in the Calder Cup playoffs. I don't. If you want to recap it, you want to write about it, you want to tweet your thoughts after the game, fine. I'm also not going to police how you use Twitter. But I would say that the play-by-play tweeting of the American League, unless you're working for the American League team or covering the American League team as someone who covers them as their primary responsibility, which there aren't very many people that do that, though there are some, I don't need to see it. That's my opinion.
I mean, people have just gotten so mad about this, and I just don't understand. For example, last night you tweeted about how you're going to be in this, you know, this week for Robbie, and I quote tweeted you. I said, "This will be fun, extensive ads analysis and more." You know, making a little joke, having a little fun with it. So I've got at John Drury 3 tweets at me. I don't understand why you're so upset that your station is airing the Milwaukee games. They air minor league baseball, and there was a lot of NASCAR play-by-play yesterday. I've read at least 98% of your articles and 95% of R&R, Robbie and Rex Road, and this seems out of character. And I'm like, dude, I'm not mad. I didn't say, first of all, I made it clear, like, that's great that we're airing them. For people who want to follow along, here it is. We're providing that. I'm not mad about anything. I'm making jokes. Yeah, it's the tweeted play-by-play. And to your point, it really is anything. Like the Super Bowl. Don't tweet you're covering the Super Bowl? I don't need, there's a four-yard run on third and, there's a four-yard run on second and 10. It's now third and 6. No! Like, if anybody gives a crap about that, they're watching the Super Bowl.
Right.
And you do not need to tweet me what's happening in something everybody's watching.
And if I need a score update, I have plenty of apps for that. Like, I don't need, like, for me, tweeting during a game, it's to add context. It's to add something that you cannot see on the play-by-play sheet. It's to add a statistic or an analysis of the play that led to the goal or the point or the touchdown or what have you. Like, that is, you know, that is what I would use Twitter for during games. I don't need the play-by-play. Hurricanes going back on the power play. They're 0-for-4 today. Great. Thank you. Like, I didn't know that. I'm probably watching the game. Like, I don't – the play-by-play, I am very anti-play-by-play on Twitter.
Now, there is another aspect to this that some people would argue, and I'm here for examples if you can give them to me. There may be one example when it comes to the Predmirals that is relevant. We'll get to that next. Robbie and Rex are 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Final segment here on Robbie and Rex are 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Joe Rex showed Adam Biggin in for Robbie. Nick Fraser in for Michelle Knezovic today. And, here's the point made to me on the text line, and I think it's worth talking about, which was, and I've lost the text, so, but I can paraphrase. I can paraphrase for you. Oh, yeah, here we go. Check Barry Trotz's comments on your station about the importance of Calder Cup success and what it does for teams and players from Brett in Lebanon. And look, I understand that Barry likes the term serial winners. Again, it's not a bad thing to be taking part in winning games at the minor league level. Okay?
No, there is value in that for sure.
But, so... So I'll go back to I covered the 1999 Lansing Lugnuts. I was a beat writer for the A-Ball 1999 Lansing Lugnuts, okay? Cubs affiliate.
The Lugnuts.
Yes.
Gotta love it.
Yes. And they were an amazing team. They had Corey Patterson. They had Hesop Choi. They had Carlos Zambrano. Some other Matt Mock, who, of course, went on to quarterback LSU, some other prospects. And they were coached by Oscar Acosta, rest in peace, one of probably the most colorful person I've ever covered. Tremendous fun covering that team. They did make the playoffs. I do remember that. But, you know, Cubs fans were absolutely bonkers for that team because, yeah, at that time, Corey Patterson was like number 2 pick overall, I believe. I mean, people thought he was going to be a superstar for a long time. He was a very good player, but he wasn't, you know, quite that level.
I just have to say, by the way, that their mascot is terrifying.
The Lugnuts?
Big Lug.
Big Lug, baby.
He's a dinosaur with Lugnuts in his nose.
Oh, yeah. You should come up to, come up. We'll go to a Lugnuts game. It's a good time.
Okay. You got some pull around there still?
Oh, sure. Sure. Well, I mean, tickets are cheap. That's my pull. You know?
Yes.
But anyway. But the point, their team success, no one cared about that. It's like, do things that help you win. Of course, people are trying to win. You're trying to get into routines. But you got to show me where like minor league team success just translated, okay, to major league team success in a franchise. If there's an example, I'm here for it. Now, Aaron Sims, the radio announcer for the Admirals, did tweet out this. The last time the Admirals won a second-round series, May 9th, 2006, it's a 4-2 win at Houston, and he tweeted out the lineup. The lineup included Shea Weber. You may have heard of that guy. It included Jordan Tutu, you know, at forward. It included Juan Pecorine at goalie. So, okay, I mean, that's interesting for sure. You're talking about two in particular, all-time great players for the Nashville Predators,
mm-hmm,
eventually. But
and a fan favorite. I mean, Tutu had a long career.
And a very good player. Yes. Yeah, sure. But and that's great. I guess, I don't know. So let's go back to some of the rosters when they had, like, Yossi and some of those other guys going through there. I mean, I guess because they didn't make it far. Like, it just, I'm sorry. There's a disconnect for me on putting too much emphasis on this. I've loved the videos all year long about Askarov. That's great. Whenever he does something amazing, or, you know, an Evangelista before he got called up, like the individual videos, like here's how this prospect's doing, that's very valuable. Big time. Yes, this is good. But I think trying, like, again, someone who thinks, like, if they win the Calder Cup, Carl Taylor's getting the job, or, oh, if they win the Calder Cup, I guess in 4 years the Preds win the Stanley Cup, it doesn't translate.
No, I don't think so. I just randomly pulled up the 2011 Calder Cup playoffs roster for the Milwaukee Admirals. The leading scorer, Gabriel Bourque, 7 goals, 13 points in 13 games for the Admirals that year. Roman Yossi had 7 points in 13 playoff games for the Admirals that year. Ryan Ellis had 2 points in 7 playoff games for the Predators. Austin Watson appeared in 3 games, didn't have any points. So, I mean, I understand your point. Now, there, you know, it is important for organizations to have, you know, to establish that winning culture, and that's why minor league teams, specifically the higher ones, I feel like the AHL, AAA baseball, those are the ones that put the priority into winning and wanting to establish their own winning culture. But as you said, it's, you know, if the Admirals win the Calder Cup, how much do I think that will translate to success for those players that participate in that in the NHL? Maybe a little. But I don't think it will make a huge difference. If the Admirals lose in the conference final versus win the Calder Cup, like, I don't think it's going to change the trajectory of Luke Evangelista's career.
Not like, he's getting a chance to play meaningful hockey games right now, which is good. But these meaningful hockey games in the postseason of the AHL are not nearly as meaningful as any NHL game he plays, and he got to play some at the end of last season.
And did well.
No, he's good. I think Kemmel, who's lighting it up in these playoffs, I mean, look, it's not like this is a new idea, but I think eventually he might be something here, okay? But you tell me, let's think of any great player in the NHL over the span of your time of paying attention to the NHL. Do you know how any of them did at lower levels of hockey from a team perspective?
That's a good question. Like, I can't rattle off, you know, the records and standings placements of the Milwaukee Admirals.
Like, sometimes you're just on a crappy team and you're by far the best player and you get your numbers, but the team sucks.
I will give you one example that might work to your point, though it's not a player, it's a coach. You know, I grew up in Virginia Beach, Virginia. We had minor league hockey.
Shout out to the 757.
Yes, we had it was an ECHL team that went to the AHL, and then it's now back in ECHL. But 2010, 2011, I can't remember the exact year. See, that's the point. The AHL Norfolk Admirals, who were the affiliate of the Tampa Bay Lightning.
A lot of Admirals talk.
Different Admirals, though. Went to the, you know, won the Calder Cup. You know, they had a winning streak that was like 25 or 26 games in a row during the regular season. Their coach, John Cooper. I mean,
I think there's something to that for sure.
Yes.
You know, being able to basically to create a team out of a bunch of prospects who are trying to get to the next level and getting them to perform together I think that's a great audition for a coach.
Right.
So, like, while I don't believe Carl Taylor is going to be the next Nashville Predators head coach, I don't think that's true. I do think that Carl Taylor is helping himself right now.
Mm-hmm.
Not helping himself to the point of win the Calder Cup, get the job. But I think, look, he's helping himself, but I think more still from individual players improving, because you can still improve at the NHL level, and especially if you're coaching a young team. That's what you're talking about. An up-and-comer, right?
It was the 2012 Calder Cup playoffs. That's when the Admirals won, and I'm looking at the Norfolk Admirals won, and I'm looking at their roster. And they had a few players that became big parts of championship teams or close to championship teams with the Lightning. Tyler Johnson was on that team. Alex Killorn was on that team. Andre Palat was on that team. Mm-hmm. So and John Cooper was the coach. I mean, Radko Gudas, who's now playing, a big role for the Florida Panthers, he was on that team.
Like, I mean, I'm sure any team that wins the Calder Cup has at least 2, 3, 4 guys who are going to be impactful NHL players, right? You would hope.
Right. But like that was a huge moment for John Cooper, to lead a team to that, it's like 20 something game winning streak. They rolled through the Calder Cup playoffs. I think they only lost like 1 or 2 games the entire time. He wins the championship. A few years later, he's in Tampa and he's been there ever since. There are examples of that for sure. But I don't think there is a correlation, a strong enough correlation between minor league playoff success and NHL playoff success.
Yeah. I mean, Kenan Waverly throws me Fresno Grizzlies, Washington Nationals World Series champs. They're a minor league team for the San Francisco Giants World Series champs, too. Also, they were the Astros World Series champs minor league team. Wow, they were the minor league team for everybody, apparently, at the major league level. Yeah, look. I mean, sometimes you have loaded teams, right? So I don't think that the process of winning, the experience of winning is a bad thing at all to work on. Like the Barry Trotz term, serial winners. That's fine. But you're going to find a lot more examples of zero correlation at all.
I feel like a serial winner whenever I go to the grocery store and they've got the giant-sized box of Honey Nut Cheerios.
Oh yeah,
yeah.
That's your jam, huh?
Me and Arlo. Arlo loves some Honey Nut Cheerios.
Nice.
There's your humor for the day.
Yes. No. You're a week late on serial winners puns, but it's cool. I mean, I think you can get in on that too. There's people now who are mad that we're, Will from Nashville. Wow, must be a slow news cycle if we're debating the validity of caring about the Milwaukee team's success. Well, look, it's.
Titans OTA start tomorrow.
It's happening right now. It's happening right now, and it's turned into a little bit of a firestorm.
Joe started. I mean, started it. I mean, Jared took it. You lit the match. Jared brought the flamethrower.
Yeah,
like that.
I mean, in all seriousness, I think people sometimes get a little bit too mad at Jared. I mean, I'm defending Jared is a very uncomfortable thing for me. Okay. But I mean, if you're going to be mad at him, you got to be mad at me too. That's all I'm saying.
Yes. Well, as I said, Titans OTA start tomorrow, right?
So they do.
We'll have plenty of Titans talk tomorrow.
You are absolutely right, Adam. I'm glad you brought that up because, yes, Titans do have OTAs tomorrow. Titans have open media tomorrow, and I believe that we can grab anybody we want tomorrow coming off the field, which is going to make for some interesting thing. That makes for interesting coverage. Is what you're going to get. You're going to get a variety of different
things. Who are you making a beeline toward tomorrow?
Who would you guess?
Malik Willis.
That's not a bad guess, but no.
I that was a joke.
No, right. I mean, honestly, Malik Willis is a very interesting person to talk to me right now because it's like, oh, by the way, see you. Good luck, Malik. If I'm Malik Willis, I'm like, okay, well, let me show you what I did this offseason.
Okay, so maybe I'm onto something there. I was thinking Ryan Tannehill.
Obviously. Any other guesses?
Derrick Henry.
Well,
that's the thing, though. So they bring some people to the podium, right? So are some people like exempt from the on the field?
Well, that's
thing?
A good question. That's a good question because the answer is 31.
Hmm.
Kevin Byard.
That's true. I had forgotten
for
about
me.
The Kevin Byard drama.
Yeah. I mean, he hasn't talked about it himself, but. To your point, there's probably a very good chance that he would be one of the podium people.
I had forgot like that's how far down we are from that. I feel like I forgot about the whole Kevin Byard pay cut scenario.
Right. There. So we will get talk to him in some form or fashion tomorrow. I believe if he's here. I actually don't know. That's another thing. Who's going to be here for OTAs? Not many campus OTAs. So we will get into that tomorrow and much more. But coming up next, we have Chase and Michelle here on 102.5, 106.3 The Game.